You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
My name is Liv Moore, and I died, sort of. I had a promising career and a great fiancé. Then I went to the world's worst boat party and got turned into a zombie. Now I work at the morgue for access to brains, but brain eating has side effects. I take on the victim's personality traits and have visions which I use to help solve their murders. I work with a detective who thinks I'm a psychic, and my boss, the medical examiner, the only person who knows my secret. I'm a crime-fighting zombie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks as we talk iZombie Season 1, Episode 10, Mr. Berserk, or as we find out later, M.R. Berserk. My name is Heather, and I want to thank you for joining me because I'm not sure if I'm recording this by myself or not, because something I was hoping wasn't going to happen did happen, and I might be here all by my lonesome.
Oh, come on. Don't be overdramatic. I'm here, and I'm not even here under protest. So, you know, appreciate it.
That is my podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Thank you, Alex, for joining me, because when I was watching this, my first note is, I will be podcasting alone.
No, I decided that I'm far more professional, and I will finish off this season. And if it doesn't end to my liking, I will simply not come back. But Ravi and Clive and Liv, they kind of grew on me like fungus. So I'm back.
I am glad, because I wouldn't want to do this without you. And I'm sure the listeners wouldn't want to listen to just me talking all the time. I don't even want to listen to just me talking all the time. So thank you so much for joining us. We are going to be talking about this episode. We only have a few more episodes left before the season is over.
I know
I was really disappointed in last week's episode that I really loved, which I'm going to apologize to the listeners for the 20 minutes of explanation of why I loved the episode and yet gave it such a low rating. I promise my explanation for today's will be much shorter. I promise. We're going to start where we normally start with our title cards. We had Max Rampager, Third Degree at the Fourth Estate, Three Sheets to the Wind, which, by the way, does not mean the sails of the ship. The sheets were actually the ropes that tied the sails down on the ships, and when they got loose, it was usually because of drunken sailors. So, sorry, bit of useless trivia that I just had to share, because that's what I do. That's how I roll. If it gets me absolutely nowhere in life, I'm going to share it with you. Plain Dead, Start Spreading the News, The Candyman Can, which, hey, iZombie writers, you stole my title from one of our Gotham podcasts, because
that was exactly what I wanted to say. At first I was like, huh, this looks familiar. Why would it look familiar? I am completely unfamiliar with American stuff, so why would I know this thing? This thing that is no doubt a pun on something. And then, you know, it was like lightning, like this light bulb suddenly went on over my head. It was like, we did this. Thieves. Nasty little thieves.
Are the iZombie writers, or at least the title card people, listening to us or listening to our podcast, going back and listening to that? And really, you're listening to that episode of Gotham? I think our title was probably one of the best things about that episode.
Well, let's be real, our podcasts are the best thing about Gotham, period. I would understand if they decided to, you know, lessen the blow, take away some pain, and just listen to our brilliant ranting. The Candyman Can, but extra points.
If you're an iZombie fan and you're also a Gotham fan and you disagree with what we're saying and have said multiple times about Gotham, please let us know. You can contact us, sci-fi4chicks@sci-fi4me.com, the hotline 573-427-2434, that's 573-42-sci-fi, and of course on Twitter at sci-fi4chicks. Like, I got that out of the way early too. We would love to hear from you about anything on any of those, so feel free to let us know. The last title card that we had was Blood on Your Hands, and I think we need to just get at least that initial part over with, so I can see if I'll be doing the rest of the podcast alone, really, or not. I was really hopeful that maybe Blaine just shot over Lowell's head, really was just a fake out. Yeah, it wasn't. Lowell is no more.
Yeah, and I figured it was because he got this show on A&E, Damien. Which I don't understand, why couldn't he stay on iZombie and just move away? Like, move back to London? I would be perfectly okay with that. But seeing you know, Liv all shocked and with that little blood splatter on her cheek and being interrogated, once again broke my heart, and I was forcing myself basically to continue watching the episode because I had to remind myself, you will need to talk about the rest of the episode with Heather. So just keep holding on.
I think we should send out a congratulations to Bradley James, because from what I originally read is the Lowell character was supposed to be just like a one episode, a one-off, that one that he was in at the beginning. And whether it's the writing, they decided to make it longer, or when Bradley started acting in it, they decided to integrate it more when they first met him and started integrating him. So his part did last longer than originally he thought. And congratulations to him on Damien. I think one big false problem there was the fact that iZombie shoots in Vancouver and Damien's going to shoot in Toronto. And while it's the same country, that's like saying I'm going to work in New York and Los Angeles.
At the same time.
So at the same time, yeah. So I can kind of understand, but congratulations on the new show. I'm sure we will be watching it. We'll be looking for that. And like he said in one interview, he's going to go from occasional scenes that he had in iZombie to this is the show revolves around him.
Yeah.
iZombie, he's part of a cast. He is the main, he is Damien, so.
He is the title character.
He's definitely getting a step up.
So it's going to be huge, and I'm really happy for him. But I could use a character that he plays that A, survives, and B, is not entirely, completely, you know, Satan spawn. It's not that I'm picky about the characters that I love. I'm not. I tend to fall in love with characters right and left. It's just, once I fall in love with a character and I enjoy the actor, I will follow him to the grave. As can be witnessed by me watching The Night Shift. That is a terrible show, and I have no idea how it got the second season. But I'm watching it because Brendan Ferry is on it.
So congratulations, yes. Bradley, from Sci-Fi for Chicks. We are sad that you've left, because you added a great dynamic on the show, but yeah, okay, it's anybody that was a Lowell Live shipper, sorry, it really ain't going to happen now. Really ain't going to happen. You did mention that beginning. I liked, and I read online somebody else that commented on this, that they like this, that juxtaposition back and forth, the intercutting between Liv being interrogated and really giving crappy answers to this.
Yeah.
What's happened and why she was there and why she's covered in blood and all this. And Ravi opening the body bag and seeing who it was and everything happening. And our Lieutenant Suzuki, his name was said enough that now I know that he actually has a real name, coming down and covering up for the whole live lol zombie thing. You know, no, it was a suicide, you know, ballistic test and all that. Even though Ravi is like, yeah, I love that Ravi knows and has told Liv and that they're questioning this, because they now know that this cop is really covering up for zombiness. Not just that something's fishy, but he knows.
And from that, they only have one tiny little step to he's a zombie. Because, like with everybody else who isn't Liv, you can't tell just looking at him that he's a zombie. So, right. I'm, you know, keeping my fingers crossed that they will find out, possibly, probably, maybe, hopefully, in the next two episodes. Because I have, two episodes? How much they have left? Two or three?
11, 12, 13. Three more.
Yeah, so in the next two episodes, that they find out. And hey, we'll see how it looks like. But at least now they know that Blaine has the big boss in his pocket. Well, that's
yeah, I think even if they don't 100% click things together right now, like totally connecting Blaine and him, I think, like you said, they're that half a step away from the moment of what's going on. They're not clueless anymore. They're not thinking something, well, it just happened because it happened, or it's just a wacky coinky dink. It's deliberate now because it's obvious that it wasn't a self-inflicted wound, you know, not just because Ravi knows Lowell. And it's probably a part of him is going, man, I was so close on that research, so close on that research with him. But knowing that it really wasn't, and it's obvious that it wasn't a suicide, that there's this big cover-up, I think that is going to be really great, too, about bringing Clive really into this. Because this opening, in addition to having that and showing that how immediate after this is, because she's still on the PTSD brain.
Yeah.
And I like her saying she needs to get off of that because it's causing all these problems with the post-traumatic stress, and she needs something else. I loved seeing Ravi and Clive really doing, and well, everybody really, sorry for your loss, and how they're comforting their friend and trying to do something for their friend, and Ravi really knowing, with her being a zombie, you know, what this means in greater context, and the friendships really are developing so beautifully.
No, they really are. They really are. And not only with Liv, because that really short exchange between Clive and Ravi, as they watched Liv being interrogated, just did something to me, basically, and made me really emotional, and not because a character that was a favorite of mine was now dead, but seeing how they were concerned about their mutual friend. Because while Ravi and Major are friends and, you know, BFFs for life and fighting and questing together and all that, Ravi and Clive were always more of working colleagues, you know, and associates, and not friends. Even though they are both friends with Liv, they are, you know, I think they are friendly with each other, mostly because they are friends with Liv. That's the kind of dynamic right. that I, you know, saw so far. But in that one scene, it felt like they kind of bonded a little bit in a way that Clive said that, no, Ravi actually can't stay here. And, you know, and at the same time, Clive was there, even though he wasn't in a room, he was there for Liv. And still he knew that Ravi couldn't stay because of how, you know, there would be a conflict of interest. For a second there, I actually wondered if anyone would bring up conflict of interest, either between Ravi and Liv, or Clive and Liv, because in the past episodes, they started working together really closely, and I seriously doubt that people in the department actually missed how often Clive was there talking to the assistant Amy or whoever Liv is.
Right.
So I was wondering for a second whether or not somebody would be bringing a conflict of interest. And I was actually pleased that Clive wasn't in the room interrogating, because my years of knowledge acquired from procedural dramas would really clash with that visual. But hey, that didn't last long when Lieutenant Suzuki? It sounds like a Suzuki, motorcycle brand.
It is a motorcycle. Yeah, it is.
I'm kind of on the fence on whether or not I actually like that name, but I suppose it will grow on me like Clive did. So...
Yeah. Well, it's better than some of the other names that we've had out there. Even though we're going to talk about Major more later, you did, you know, bring up how everybody is treating Liv because of what has happened to Lowell. And that moment, somebody mentioned this online about how Liv and Major were just kind of like on paper this whole time because of the way the show started. We see them quickly lovey-dovey as fiancés, and then she's a zombie and she's cut him out of her life for his own safety. So we've kind of had this more on paper kind of relationship. That moment when he's there for her, when he picks her up because she's at the bar drinking 10 shots, by the way. Either zombies have a really high tolerance, or this Rebecca Hinton had a really high tolerance, or together, or whatever. But he's the one that she calls. He picks her up. He comforts her. Even though they've had that history, that moment of him taking care of her and feeling, saying, I'm sorry, and being there for her and rubbing her back the way he used to, that made her feel better. That was such a perfect moment to show what their relationship really was and how deep it was that he's comforting her because she just lost the man she was with that wasn't him. And his emotion, his caring for her outweighed his hurt that it wasn't she, that he wasn't the one that she was with. I thought that was such a beautiful moment, and it was, she did great in that, but for me, it was such a great Robert Buckley moment, and it was great in the whole context of Lowell and the relationships that all of them had with her, because I saw it with Ravi and I saw it with Clive, and then just to have that cherry on top of how Major is really reaching out to her, it was just really sweet to see.
In a way, about Liv drinking and alcoholic brain and all that, it did feel like an easy way out for a little bit there, because here she was, losing her the man. I'd like to think she felt something for, not only this zombie connection, but I really hoped that she felt something for Lowell, and that was a little bit
Oh, I think she
stronger
did,
than
yeah.
just liking his body, which we expressed our appreciation on that front. But it felt like an easy way out to have her cope with that immediate loss by the way of alcohol, and having her be on alcoholic brain, so to speak. For a little bit there, I felt a little cheated that it was, this typical coping mechanism that we see over and over and over again in various media, that you go on a drinking bender and, all that stuff. And I really hope that they will show us Liv coping with that loss after she's no longer on the journalist brain. Because, like I said, I don't like lazy writing, and seeing the writers use the alcoholic brain felt like a shortcut to get her where she needed to be with an explanation that would allow her to be back in business once the brain is out of her system. And it's not exactly a huge problem that I have. I mean, I've had huge problems with other shows and other storylines and characters. So this is like a
Gotham.
minor, tiny little crack on otherwise perfectly okay picture, but it's there. And because after last week's episode, I was less willing to overlook imperfections, it actually was noticeable to me.
I found that interesting because to me, it's the exact opposite. I thought this was the perfect way to do it because it was such a human thing to do. This is immediately after the loss. She's been interrogated basically as a suspect because it was so sketchy about her story and what was going on because she's trying to cover up things. I mean, what were you doing? I was out driving. Great, where? We can check traffic cams. I'm like, oh, they're really going for it. She's under all this pressure, and that to me seems a very human thing to do. I need to get away from this. I can't get away from this. And However stereotypical it may be, whatever kind of trope it is, it's also kind of a truism, a human truism. It's an escape. I can't deal with this right now, so I want a drink. And what better way for her to do that than she has to get off this PTSD brain. She has to get off her patriot brain, because that is just the trauma. I mean, it was a gunshot. It was this murder. It's right in front of her eyes. That's perfect where we keep going. She needs something else. And, you know, well, what we have is Rebecca Hinton. She's a raging alcoholic. Sold. Great. I'm not even going to have to get drunk just because I'm drinking. I'm going to be drunk from the brain on down. It hit her. To me, it made the Lowell's death that much more impactful, because she wants to escape that immense pain that she's feeling. And that is something I think, I don't want to say is acceptable, but is something that is normal, is to escape that way. And so I thought it was the perfect brain, actually, for her to have this. And especially the fact that it ties in to our case this week, which the case actually had some relevance this week, actually quite a bit of relevance. It tied into, because Rebecca was that reporter that was investigating these kids that were missing. We now find out she's investigating, or had been investigating, because she's dead now, the whole thing that was leading to Max Rager and other psychotic episodes and deaths other places. It tied in Lowell into the crime as well. And it tied in so many things in the past. I actually really liked that.
The crime itself was really good this week. And I knew the moment the episode finished, I knew that we would be talking about the case. And not only as it related to Liv's brain or character interactions and all that, but actually, I knew that we would be talking about the case itself, because it took from the past episodes with this Max, with mentioning of the Max Rager girl who went missing, right? And all those that's not the right word, but all those violent outbursts that people had because of Max Rager and all that. Plus, it allowed us to see Steven Weber, which he's awesome, and I like seeing him in TV shows that I watch. So the case itself was really, really amazing. No matter what happened, live and brain-wise, I felt like, yeah, this is a case we would be talking about no matter what. So props to the writers.
Before we get into the case, I just want to finish with Lowell. We've now spent 20 minutes on Lowell, almost 20 minutes. What did you think about the whole thing with Suzuki wanting it as a suicide and Ravi saying, if we classify this as a suicide, then we can dispose of his body in a way that nobody else is going to get to it. If we do it as a homicide and they get Blaine, what if Blaine gets put in prison and now we have a zombie in a caged space that doesn't have access to brains and all? The logic of Ravi versus the emotion of Liv and the idea of cremating Lowell's body.
Somebody had to be logical about this, and Ravi proved in the past that he is the scientific mind in this duo, and he will be thinking with a clear head, as no matter how emotional the situation. He showed that better than ever when he was, you know, struggling and trying to figure out whether or not he would change into a zombie, because little tiny white rat bit him. I wasn't surprised that Ravi was the one who presented Liv with pros and cons of, hey, we know that our boss technically is in Blaine's pocket, but the way he sold this crime to everybody else makes sense. And even though we won't be able to bring Blaine to justice the way we recognize justice in the system, but it will be safer for everybody involved. It not only gets Liv off the hook for sketchy, answers, but it actually closes the case and avoids any further questioning. Plus, Ravi does have a point. Lowell is their first, well, he isn't their first dead zombie, because they already killed a zombie before, and I can only assume Ravi did something with the body, so it cannot be found again. But Lowell is the first zombie that they know, in a way that they met and talked to when he was a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
So it made sense that Ravi would be thinking about it. I wonder what he's going to do with the ashes. I wouldn't be surprised if he wanted to test them.
I hope it's not part of the cure. I also liked out the whole episode how she sees the drawer that Lowell's in and just keeps avoiding it, but that at the end she does have her moment where she goes and cries over him, like she lets it go. She's worked through it, I think, with the alcohol. Had that moment of denial, like it was easy to deny, you know, the stages of grief, and I think she's accepted it now, and now she's getting angry. This time I'm going to kill Blaine. Really, I mean it this time. You have three episodes in a season two.
I don't think so that he's going to die.
I did like that moment of her, basically, I think, really saying goodbye to Lowell.
Yeah.
I don't like that we said goodbye to Lowell, but it was a nice moment, nice way for her to move on, I think.
It was nice, but That's what I'm going to say about it.
So Rebecca Hinton is our corpse, is our lunch, which, okay, brains didn't smell good to Ravi when he thought he might turn into a zombie because of the rat bite, which the rats are still around and he only has one thing. That shot of Clive sniffing Liv's lunch and like, smells good. What's that, shrimp? I'm like, oh my gosh.
But hey,
so
Ravi
funny.
Was smelling a raw brain, like uncooked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure Clive smelled what came out of a microwave. So.
Yeah.
But it's still weird. Come on. Do people actually smell food like that? Ugh.
I wouldn't want to eat the rest of it. You were standing completely over it and smelling. Ew. So you were talking earlier about the crime and how we eventually get over to Steven Weber as our bad guy, Vaughn, what's his name? Again, with the names. The name. I can't remember what the last name was.
I'm calling him Steven Weber because I didn't even catch his name.
It's a joke, running joke this time. Well, I know we talked about it last week. I mentioned it. I just happen to remember it's Vaughn. I mean, at least Vaughn was a little bit better, but it's like, oh. But you are absolutely right. I love Steven Weber, and he has this way of being such a, on the surface, nice guy, nice business guy, mm-hmm. and yet being able to have this under of either crazy or vicious or what, you know, ruthless. So many different things I've seen him in. He was in a TV adaptation of The Shining, very different from Jack Nicholson, but still very good and very creepy. He was on two summers ago, it was Wilfred, where he played the boss who blew his brains out right in front of everybody. And that's not a funny subject, but the way he did everything and led up to it, it was funny. Of course, Wilfred is kind of an off show. I love his casting in this. Mm. I love him in this.
Yeah, but I have to tell you, it's not a problem, but I cannot find another word for it. With Steven Weber is with David Anders, no matter who he plays, you don't trust the guy. Because there's something about the way he portrays his characters and the characters he's cast in. You just don't trust him. You know he's up to no good. But I've seen Steven Weber in both absolutely positive roles and really questionable ones. And I buy him every time.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. The last thing I saw him in was Chasing Life, I think. He played an uncle to the main character there. And before that, it was a defendant on How to Get Away with Murder. So,
mm-hmm.
and every time I buy what he's selling, basically. And just seeing him as this CEO of this company that maybe possibly has a product that makes zombies. It's just whatever he's going to sell or try to sell, I'm going to buy it completely. Because he's just that kind of a person, that kind of an actor. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him so much.
I love when she comes into his office and is acting very police-like. Actually, she's on journalist brain, but the way she's asking questions, yeah. It's she's police. But when the secretary comes in and says, she's an ME, not police. And just, he's like, well, thank you very much. Like, how he dismisses her,
yeah,
is just so perfect where it's not, it's condescending and patronizing without being condescending and patronizing. It's bright and cheery while being very menacing and dark. He needs to stay for a while. He really does.
But the best thing about him in that one tiny little scene was that he was in no way telegraphing, I am the evil overlord, I will take over with zombies and all that. No, he was
yeah.
a perfect sleazy CEO of a multi-billion dollar company.
But perfectly nice.
Yes, sure, I will answer the questions because a cop is asking and right now I don't feel like I need to call the legal department. But the moment the ruse is up, so to speak, it's like, and we're done. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
he's really great on that. I think it's just wonderful. And at the whole time, we have Liv and Clive going on all these, following the leads from Rebecca's journal,
yeah.
finding the guy that hazing and pranks. This is why I don't like practical jokes. I'm not somebody that likes practical jokes played on her or being part of them. I really don't. I may be sarcastic, but I'm not practical jokes. That whole thing that those guys, those lawyer legal students did to that one kid of making him think that he had killed this one girl.
Yeah.
That's just downright despicable. Please, nobody get ideas from this. That is just awful. When they went to go see him, how he was just zoned out, and it wasn't until they start... at first, his skin is so white. Are you a zombie? Wait, you're not in a place where you can get hair dye, and your hair's really red. So no, you're not a zombie, but you did rage out, and they're investigating more and more on this, that it's a Max Rager thing, and realizing that MR is not Mr., it's Max Rager. This is where I really don't like that they do previously on iZombie, because they telegraphed that.
Yeah.
As soon as they're doing all this stuff, Max Rager, Max Rager, Max Rager, Max Rager, in the previously on, okay, that's a big thing. Oh, Mr. Jackson, Mr. LW, Mr. Okay, so these aren't the big revelation when Clive figures out they're not people, but places where people went berserk. I was like, yeah, okay. I already got that. But it was another piece of detective work. I'm glad that they did, and they were able to connect it. And now it's the zombie thing. Like you were saying with Ravi and Liv being that close to realizing that the police department is now headed by a zombie. This gets Clive, I think, that much closer to being ready to be let in on the big secret.
And once again, this episode made me hope, against all hope, that they will introduce Clive to the zombie secret, because I feel like their dynamic and the ability of what they can do with the knowledge and with fighting Blaine and his evil zombie gang will grow a lot with Clive in the know. If I had to choose between Major and Clive as to who I want to get included in the inner circle, so to speak, despite the fact of how much I love Major and what not knowing does to him, I would still vote Clive. Because Clive as a cop and knowing about zombies, it would make him so useful. every time a law enforcement officer learns the secret, whether or not it's vampires or werewolves or zombies or what have you, it becomes so much easier for the characters, but also it becomes better in the grand scheme of things. Because they now have resources and opportunities. And this another person who has really useful skills, like knowing that, hey, shoot them in the head, you know? So I really hope Clive will learn before the end of the season.
We'll talk more about part of what I'm going to say in a minute, but I think between Major and Clive, I think they're both going to find out. But I think Major might still stay very separate because he's not going to be told by the Scooby Gang. Whereas I think Clive will, because Clive is like you were saying, you know, he can help with this, and there's so much more that he can do, and he's in this. I mean, his boss is a zombie.
Yeah.
And he's got all these connections. And by the way, Lowell was a zombie and he was killed by another zombie who's trying to make more zombies and is killing kids for zombie food. And I see them in telling Clive, even if begrudgingly, but I see Liv and Ravi including Clive. And I see Major not be included by Liv and Ravi with the way they're setting up. We'll talk about that more later. And so he's still going to be on the outside, even though I think they're both going to know.
I like that idea. I do.
What did you think about when she was off getting drunk again and the guy sends over the Max Rager for her? We meet Sebastian Meyer, who says that he was Rebecca's informant, but that there's another person working inside, and Liv, help us. And so that gets Liv on the track of tracking down who it was at Pilates. Who, by the way, when somebody says, I'm going to go change, let me go change first, and walks away, don't believe them. That's a perfect escape ruse. I need to go to the bathroom. I need to change. Let me just grab this. They're trying to escape. Getting you into an ambush, where she is ambushed by Sebastian.
Yeah.
We have a new psycho. A blood-licking psycho.
Yeah. Yeah, and just think about it. If he was that much of a psycho when he was alive, yeah, just imagine what will happen once he's, spoiler, a zombie. It's just, it's not going to be pretty.
It was a brutal way to do it, having her pass out and then her wake up laying there looking at this dead body and them being tied to these cinder blocks. And we, you know, at first I thought, well, maybe she's still alive too and just badly beaten or something. And Liv will full-on zombie mode, rage out, and save both of them. When he threw that woman, Adele, I think was her name, was the secretary, overboard, I'm like, oh, this is serious. This is, they're really ramping up for the end because this guy is psycho crazy. And then she sees it, she's tied to, oh.
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
I really hoped, probably just like Liv, that running over him with a motorboat would be enough, but clearly this psycho just doesn't want to stay down. But hey, we have another clue. You don't need the scratch, you don't need a bite, you just need a little blood from a zombie.
Bodily fluids.
Yeah, bodily fluids. And it works. So
that means way back in the beginning, unless they used protection. Well, no, depending on how intense it was, Blaine didn't have to scratch Jackie to turn her. I mean, he probably did because that's what how Liv got turned was him scratching her. But yeah, you don't have to do it. And that was a creepy moment. Her waking up for this, like she passes out again, wakes up again, and he's right there and licks her. Oh, super creep. But yeah, that lets you know that this zombie thing is even more deadly than you thought, which it did contribute later to her when she did sign off on Lowell. Let's do the suicide and we have to cremate him because, yeah, what if somebody, what if Ravi had to do an autopsy or something on there and accidentally, you know, somehow something happened, he could change or somebody else could change if they got in touch with him. Oh, so
yeah,
it really ups the ante on all that.
Yeah. On a more lighter note, we can now count zombies as a sexually transmitted disease.
Exactly.
That's a sentence I never thought I would say. But there you go.
And actually, it's a tie into our other podcast, Orphan Black, because, yeah, we had another STD on that you never would have thought of going on over there. So if you're interested in weird, new, genetically odd STDs, check out our other podcast for Orphan Black. There's a lot of comments I saw online about people talking about Sebastian, our new blood zombie, creepy zombie guy, and like why Liv left him, why she didn't think of him being a zombie, why she didn't do this and that, and like why she didn't get the thumb drive from him before pushing him over. Well, first off, she went into full-on zombie mode. So I don't think in full-on zombie mode you're thinking about, hey, let me go ahead and get that thumb drive that has that memo on there that's going to incriminate these people.
Yeah.
I think she's like, you know, kill you. And he goes overboard. I honestly, until the end, when he came up, he was on shore and is suddenly zombie. The amount of blood, the idea of a propeller going over this guy, I thought he was mincemeat and would be gone. And having those gashes on his face, it that came really close to actually finishing him off, because, you know, go for the brain, you're dead.
Yeah.
As a zombie. Anywhere else, you're fine. So I think she didn't realize that he had any way of still being alive when she left.
Because it didn't look like it was an option. I mean, the amount of blood in the water alone,
yeah.
I was like, okay, and we're done. It's a kind of poetic end to a psychopath. You gotta admit that. But we're moving on. And clearly, apparently, no, we're not. So maybe he will be coming back before the season ends. We'll see. We'll see.
I think so. I think we'll have some baddie zombies that are not in Camp Blaine, that are not being controlled by Blaine. And again, this something I think I've mentioned before, I love, is Blaine is in this episode without being in this episode.
Mm.
This is a character that is really ever present, and I find that really interesting how they can keep doing that.
Hey, and now we have a baddie that's actually, you know, outright evil. We might try to relate to Blaine on one way or another, you know, his love for music or something else. But this guy, he's an outright psycho, and nobody's going to cry when he finally dies. For real.
I mean, I don't see Blaine licking the blood.
No.
At all.
No.
Blaine wants his brains done up in some, you know, she Michelin star restaurant type way. I don't think Blaine even wants a brain burger, you know? He's got this level. I don't see him going for the blood. This guy, Sebastian, is just out and out creepy. Which, the juxtaposition I love is, did you notice the name of the boat?
No.
Fun Fun.
Okay. Yeah, but speaking of Blaine.
He's having fun fun.
I feel like Blaine is a Machiavellian villain.
Mm-hmm.
While Sebastian was just a villain. And I don't want to say two-dimensional, but that's basically what he is so far, you know?
Well, I think Blaine is a lot more, in the Machiavellian way, predictably unpredictable.
Mm.
He's got these goals. He's got these methods. And even if our Scooby gang isn't up on it, because they're not thinking that way. You know, they don't have this kind of thing. He is very predictably unpredictable. There's certain ways he wants to go about it. This other guy, Sebastian, is just, he could snap and go anywhere, anyway. He's the kind that I'm more scared of. because you don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And he revels in the killing. He revels in knowing this. Blaine's just like, yeah, I revel in what the killing's doing for me, not necessarily the killing itself.
Yeah.
Not that it grosses him out, but that's a means to an end. Whereas I think Sebastian is like, this is fun.
He's really getting off on this.
Yeah, and that's just so incredibly wrong. This was a good week, I think, for the crime, because it really did interweave, and we are left without having a murderer caught for Rebecca's murder.
Mm.
That looked like it was an accident going down the stairs, but then Liv goes out there. You know, she's even talking about how she's the, you know, what was it, the undead whisperer? I forget exactly what she said. And, you know, people are following leads, but it doesn't get wrapped up in a nice little bow at the end of it. Like that one that we never really talked much about in Live and Let Clive, where it's this whole, like, Chinese mafia kind of thing. But it gets wrapped up in a pretty little bow.
Yeah.
Yeah, mob stuff always gets wrapped up in a pretty little bow. No. This one doesn't, and it leaves you hanging, and we've got those three episodes left to really have a nice, I think, crime arc. I think that'll be really cool.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see the investigation, you know, proceed in the next episode, unless they decide to completely forget about it and concentrate on something else. I don't know.
Because now that we have Clive more focusing on that, even though he's cared about it, because he's going to be into that. I think he's getting pulled into the Scooby gang because he has a resolution now with Major coming to him.
Mm.
Major constantly coming to him for help and things. That scene where Clive is basically confronting Major and telling him, you know, you're hitting 3 out of 3 of the requirements to be considered psych. There's no bullets. There's no blood. If you believe that, you know, you did this, then there is a problem.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole involuntary commitment is coming if you don't get straight, you know, and not that Clive's washing his hands of him, but I think he's going, man, this is it. This is as far as I go. If I keep going with you, I'm going to have to commit you.
Yeah. We end up in a place we don't want to go to. Basically.
Yeah. I mean, when he goes and investigates and he finds Julian there, and Julian's basically turning it that Major is a stalker, this whole Nicholas Sparks stalker guy turning on. I mean, these are all classic things that I can see Clive just going, it's fitting, such a perfect pattern that Major is going off the rails. Mm. And he's a friendly acquaintance, but they're not friends yet. I think they eventually will be. But yeah, that look on Major's face when, you know, he has evidence. He sees that picture that Julian is bench pressing this weight taken this morning. There's no holes in his chest, and he really thinks he's going crazy. You know, thanks for being straight with me. And he's ready to commit himself, even to the point where that moment when Ravi walks in on him and they have their fun little banter. You're leaving me? What's his name? And, you know, they have that fun little thing, but Major seeing how this devastation on Major's face when he thinks he's going crazy, the devastation on Ravi's face when he sees what they've been doing to him by denying him information. It's just like this domino effect straight through everybody. Because I don't think Clive liked delivering this information either.
Yeah.
I you know, they're not friends, but I don't think he wants to say, dude, you're cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. You know, this is... It was just a whole Major's life lately is just a domino effect straight downhill, and it hurts.
It does. But at the same time, I can't
help. I love it.
But love it, because not only it's an incredibly rich character storyline, but I can't help and compare it to our unfortunate Gotham podcast that we keep mentioning in when talking about iZombie. In comparison, and Gotham, every time, Gotham falls flat. Because in this episode, we had major storyline that was A, storyline A and storyline B that was major.
Mm-hmm.
But even though major has a completely separate plot, even though it's about the same things, but the way it happens, it's separate from everything else because he doesn't have connections to the law enforcement and he is not connected to the case of the week or anything else. But he was still present when we were talking about the case because mm-hmm. he had scenes with every character that we've mentioned when talking about the case. He picked up Liv, he talked to Clive, and he talked to Ravi before committing himself. And this, I know that Gotham writers probably don't listen to our podcasts because we've yelled at them one too many times, I feel. But this is how you keep character relevant while giving mm-hmm. them their own separate, slightly smaller storyline. This is how you do it. And I feel like this episode could be shown to everybody as Exhibit A. This is how you intertwine and bind characters and story arcs together. You know, Major maybe took, 10 minutes of screen time this week? Between all the separate scenes that he had. And still, it felt like a major, pun intended, major storyline. Yeah. Storyline. So, I am in awe of the writers, how they actually managed to make everything relevant. Nothing can be missed because it's so important in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. So, two thumbs up and all that.
What I love is you could technically take Major out of this episode and you would still have a really good episode with the crime and such. But I don't want you to because his development with what the conflicts are. I mean, the other half of when he comes to comfort Liv about Lowell dying and he's comforting her and she starts asking about him and he goes, can we not talk about that one too? And, you know, I'm fine. And her saying, I want to tell you, but I can't kind of thing. And the torture inside, I mean, Ravi and Liv going at each other about, we need to tell him, we're killing him, we're doing this to him, we're causing all this pain. And then her coming back with, I think, an equally logical argument. So we tell him, and what happens when he finds out that all the kids he loved and protected were food for zombies, and that I inadvertently ate part of this, and what do we do, you know? He's actually in a safer place. It's like, I see her point, but I see Ravi's point.
Mm.
And I think this is where, like I alluded to earlier, the fact that he does commit himself. He's staying there. He can only afford 2 weeks, so he's staying there for 2 weeks. Great, he'll be safe for 2 weeks. Which I think this is going to be a point of conflict between Liv and Peyton about...
Mm.
What's happening with Major and her maybe perceived lack of caring about it. The fact that he finds out in group now, which I like the juxtaposition to before when he was a social worker coming to the group and now he's part of the group and having to share his story. We see that one kid that, hey, their eyes were red and guess what? They're zombies. He gets told by somebody outside of the Scooby gang. If Ravi and Liv knew about this and told him, I think he'd be more accepting. But these are people that are supposed to love him and care for him, be his friend. And they let him. I can so see this. You let me think I was crazy. You let me do all this. You let me put myself in harm's way. And I have to find out about it from a stranger. It's a trope that's been used, but I think the dynamics and how these people are acting it out, it's going to come to a beautiful head of, deliciousness of you know, tearing apart and building together. And yeah, I don't think he's going to be part of the Scooby Gang, because I think he's going to be so hurt that they didn't tell him.
What spoke to me, actually, was a certain beauty in Major finding out from a psych patient. Because that alone opened a window of, will Major believe the guy? That's A. And B, if he believes the guy, will he doubt himself and his own sanity?
Right.
Because how probable exactly are the zombie, are zombies? When you think about it in those terms, he's already in a psych ward. He's talking to a psych patient who's not exactly firing on all cylinders. And you can tell by just by looking at him. So he's a little bit crazy. Even though, you know, it's not paranoia if they really are out to get you. But Major has experience. Major has the knowledge. And just like he told Ravi that if he was making the diagnosis, he would admit the patient, right? Because, like Clive said, it's three for three. So, I honestly want to see how Major is going to deal with it. And, you know, doubting himself, actually being more certain about staying in the facility because he believes that zombies are an option. Right? It just, that one little in comparison to everything else, choice the writers made of having him learn the zombies from a psych patient opened so many windows and doors, basically, of what can happen to Major. I'm looking forward to the next episode. Hopefully he's in it.
I am really loving how he's playing this because, honestly, he could be just a pretty boy. The pretty boy ex-fiancé.
Yeah.
And there is such an emotional depth to how he's playing this that I see the pain and I see everything. I'm waiting. I think we're getting ready to see, you know, full-on Major mode here. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see some of Major Rager coming out as things happen.
Yeah.
Because we haven't really seen that angry side of him. I think we will. And I like what you're saying, you know, about how he found out and what's going to happen and such. Well, you said you're looking forward to next week's episode. I am, with the exception of the fact that when the title says one thing or there's certain characters we're following that aren't then addressed in the description of the next week's episode, it kind of, you know, can be upsetting. Next week is episode 11, Astro Burger, which we had the allusion to last week, was it? With the super rich guy wanting Blaine to get the brain of the moonwalker so that the guy could know what it was like to be in space.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that's coming up. But guess what? Listed nowhere in the description of next week's episode. When someone close to Major dies of an apparent suicide, Liv consumes the brains, resulting in a mix of reality and paranoia. Clive questions Major and learns of a secret computer file that may contain important details in the investigation and finding the killer. So, yeah, I think that file that Sebastian Super Zombie had is going to come into play again.
Mm.
But notice there was no mention there about Blaine and getting an astronaut's brains. So
I've seen the previews and Blaine is in it.
Yes, well, yes, and that's what I mean. But when they're not talking about it, that doesn't bode well. Just like you were saying, they didn't talk about LOL in this week's episode
for reason.
Preview description, and there was a reason. Okay, so on our Sci-Fi for Chicks iZombie Hotness Scale, where would you rate this episode? Last week, everyone, she rated a begrudging 8. It was less than 0 because of Lowell, but averaged up to an 8 for her.
Yeah.
So where does this episode rank for you?
Much to my surprise, even though there were moments that I actually enjoyed and loved the way they handled it, I had problems relating to this episode. And I had problems as I was watching it for the first time. I had problems engaging with it. And it was like, I found myself appreciating certain scenes when I rewatched it again before we started recording. And apparently I'm doing you from last week. though I'm not rating it a 6, because I thought about rating it 6 for the sheer reason that I did not feel engaged the first time around. But then I realized that I've been rating the episodes really high because overall I'm really enjoying the season. So I decided to bump it up a little and I'm giving it a 7. Cayenne.
You know, I was thinking about everything I said last week. And some of the comments were about how this is a crime show and the crime doesn't matter. And that
they got your memo.
I think they got my memo, even though the podcast got posted late. This was, when we were breaking this down beforehand, it was, well, we need to talk about Major. And then everything else is the crime and everything else. Then those were the two big sections. I'm like, this is where the crime, it was a crime. We are investigating it, but it ties into everything. It mattered. I loved that. I loved everything with Major. So while last week I felt I was being generous and giving it a 6, even though it was a great episode that I loved, but because I was just so frustrated with the fact that everything you'd been telling me you were going to give me, you weren't really giving me anymore. I'm giving this one a Scotch bonnet, a 9.
Ooh.
I've jumped up 3 because, you know, you were saying it didn't really engage with you. I totally believed everything. She has this loss. She just wants to go on this bender and forget about it. I love Ravi saying, we've got to tell him and we're doing this to him, but we can't. We've got to protect him, because I'm like, I empathize with both of you and I don't know who's right, but now Major's found out on his own. And so it's setting up something that is organic and really cool. I even love the little tidbits of Peyton trying to text her and trying to be in there, you know, whatever. Everybody trying to be there and her pushing certain people away and letting certain people in. It just felt really good and organic. I was very close to giving this a Rokodo, a 10.
Ooh.
Very close. And then I said, okay, let me rein it in just a little bit. I'm going to back it up just a touch. So it is a very hot Scotch bonnet.
Nice.
Very hot Scotch bonnet. See, I can, you know, when you listen to what I have to say, when you give me some of the stuff that you were promising me before, that she's a crime-fighting zombie, yes, I wanted that, and I wanted it to be integrated well, and you did it, so thank you. Don't kill the astronaut, please. Don't kill the astronaut. You've already taken Lowell, don't take a moonwalker too. We only have, well, we have lost a few. We only had 12 moonwalkers in the first place. Don't take another one. Let us know what you think and how you would rate this episode on the Sci-Fi for Chicks Eye Zombie Hotness Scale. We'd love to hear on Twitter. Post a picture of the pepper you think best represents this episode. Or how many peppers, if you want to do peppers in a row. We'll go with that, too. We'd love to see. We have 3 episodes left, Alex. 3, and only 3. The number shall be 3. No?
No.
Monty Python?
No.
No? Okay. We have Astro Burger. Dead rat, live rat, brown rat, white rat. So I think we're getting the rat that had a little cameo in this episode is going to be coming back. And then, of course, ending with Blaine's World. Party time. Excellent. Wayne's World, really? You haven't seen that one either? Come on. I am doing this podcast solo. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.